If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program and welcome to a brand new week at this time on TNT Radio. This is the Australian edition coming to you direct from Sydney, and we look forward to having you here for the duration. 2 hours on air before I hand it over to Sonia Poulton, who's coming to you, of course, out of London. You can catch our 24/7 live programs on video on our website. You can do it on our app, and you can do it in just about every video streaming platform that exists on the internet. So please watch live and be part of our show, and by all means, pick up that telephone and dial our talkback lines. I'll give you the numbers in just a second. It is good to have your company as we stand up for free speech and we condemn the ever-encroaching control of international governments. That's what we do on TNT Radio, and I hope you can help us maintain that rage. In fact, that's where we kick off on our program today. It's interesting, just about every Western nation has employed or coming up with a proposal to employ a misinformation, disinformation, stroke, hate, adverse legislation. They've all got their own policies. The Scottish, of course, were the first to kick it off with their own hate crimes. The only problem is the government wanted to get stuck into J.K. Rowling because she dared to describe transgender women as biological men. She dared to tell the biological truth, and therefore, under the Scottish law, she was almost arrested, except police stepped in, and I don't think the Scottish police wanted to arrest J.K. Rowling. But these are all designed, they say, to protect you, to take you out of harm's way when it comes to hate speech and also gratuitous violence. That's what they say that this is all about, but I'm telling you, it is censorship. It is nothing more than controlling your free speech. And as long as we operate in a democratic society in places like Australia, the United States, the UK, Western Europe, there should be a maintenance of free speech, and we shouldn't have to risk free speech because we are unable to handle someone's criticism or can't handle someone else's news story that happens to be violent. We've long since been desensitized by this stuff. Now, whether that's a good thing, I'm not saying whether it's a good thing. Whether it's a bad thing, I'm not saying that either. It's what we have been used to. But in countries like Australia right now, they are pulling certain news pieces, footage that we would normally see. They're pulling that footage from social media, or they'll fine the social media platforms $785,000 a day. We're going to talk about that at length at the start of the program. Also on the show, the warrior who's been fighting against cancel culture and political correctness across all media. He does such an incredible job. Dr. Kevin Donnelly will be on the line from Melbourne. He'll be giving the censor, the e-safety commissioner, who's taking on Elon Musk, will be giving the commissioner a lesson in the value of free speech. We'll talk about what the Labor government is doing about the latest UK warnings against puberty blockers for trans patients. And there's a mayor in Europe who closed down a conservative rally by force, sent in the police, because he said the gathering of speakers was a danger to his city. This is a true story. It happened last week. Nigel Farage was one of the speakers. We'll talk about that as well with Kevin Donnelly. We'll hear from Victorian MLC, Renee Heath, as well. The biggest story, I think, in Victoria at the moment has got to be cuts in the upcoming budget to education. Some severe cuts coming the way of education and schools. We'll discuss a whole new way of electing politicians, voting for a pair, not one person, voting for a pair to take one seat in the parliament and then allow them to job share. Now, before you think that sounds rather farcical, well, that's exactly what a pair of mums from Melbourne are doing and aiming to do leading up to the federal election. And later in the show, engineer and economist Dr. Alan Moran will be joining us to discuss what the hell the Labor government is going to do at the upcoming federal budget about energy price relief. Now, they've already promised they'll take down our bills by $275. Only problem, it has gone the other way threefold. So that was a lie cubed. So what do they intend to do? Because there's no such thing as free money. There's no such thing as free energy. So how do they all of a sudden click their fingers and obtain cheaper energy for us? We'll analyse that with Alan Moran on the program. So there you have it. We've got our talkback lines as well. Those numbers, once again, from the US or Canada. If you'd like to have your say, dial in on 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Let's get started. You're with Chris Smith. We're broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network. This is TNT Radio.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, I've got a theory about government overreach, and it's this. The outrageous attempts to protect the pro-vaccine narrative during the pandemic by cancelling and censoring just about every other point of view has taught power-hungry leaders right across the West one important lesson. And it's that they can do it again because it worked last time. And so to extend their power trip at the top, to feed their monstrous egos and do as they wish with much less scrutiny, they are all creating their own ministries of truth. And I think George Orwell was an absolute prophet when he wrote 1984. I've already told you about Scotland's hate crime laws, which has this outrageous offence of stirring up hatred. That is a very loose description of having a say and having an opinion, stirring up hatred. So legitimately criticising anyone is now against the law. So watch out what you say in Scotland. Across the Irish Sea, the new PM, Simon Harris, is determined to railroad through his own Irish incitement to violence bill. That's almost coming to the Parliament. Donald Tusk's government in Poland is preparing to introduce a new criminal offence which would jail anyone who defames a member of the LGBT community. So if you have, say, a legitimate reason to criticise LGBT activists for instilling some kind of transition theory at schools, which is a legitimate observation, under that law in Poland, you'll be in jail. And in Canada, Justin Trudeau is pressing ahead with an online harms bill that would outlaw more legitimate scrutiny of activist groups and, of course, his own government. But do not for one minute think that little old Australia is lagging behind the censorship train. We are driving the lead locomotive. The federal government has proposed strengthening the powers of ACMA to determine if social media sites were complying with industry standards. This misinformation and disinformation bill, which was spoken about ad nauseum on the show, will leave the decision about what constitutes truth in the hands of public servants and those left-leaning university fact-checkers. That's who'll decide what the truth is, not you. Oh, joy. But it's what we've already seeing right now, this week, from Malcolm Turnbull's hand-picked American e-safety commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, that is the most egregious act against free speech and democratic transparency. Inman is going all out to prevent Australians from viewing the kind of material we've been privy to for decades, related to moderately violent, real-life acts that make it onto our news screens. Gone. Specifically, footage of the knife-wielding murderer at Westfield's Bondi Junction, gone. And this alleged stabber who lunged at the bishop in the church in Wakeley a week ago, gone. Both important records of criminal history, which create debate, lead to changes in the law, and educates a population, gone. But not on this woman's watch. You won't be seeing any of that. So if you think that this is necessary for a democratic population to discuss, Sorry, not on her watch. She's about to fine Elon Musk's ex $785,000 per day for allowing that footage to be published.
Well, we have a range of graduated powers. There could be civil proceedings and we could take them to court or we could fine them. Of course, the quantum of the fine would depend on the gravity of the noncompliance.
This is where we try and work with the platforms to either voluntarily raise this or to use our codes and mandatory standards to force compliance.
But we can use graduated tools like linked leash and notices. So if they fail to remove the content, then we can go to the search engines such as Google or Bing to really minimize the amount of content the Australians can see.
Yes, those Australians, they're not grown up enough to decide what to see and what to turn off. No, they haven't learnt what the stop button is or the off button is. So all the political leaders have jumped behind in-man Grant, like Anthony Albanese, the Prime Minister, and the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns. Even the New South Wales Police Commissioner is playing censor, claiming that the police force is the only arbiter of truth.
So please be assured that police will be the source of truth and not social media and misinformation.
Really? Well, the police last week told us that there were 20 police cars that were damaged and 600 people turning up to Wakeley. We find out in an official press release today there were thousands of people in attendance and 100 police vehicles damaged. So which is the truth? The truth they told us last week or the truth they told us today? But that is almost verbatim from Orwell's 1984. And sadly, only a handful of voices are pushing back. One Nation's campaign director, Craig Kelly, certainly is. Here he is on this program last Friday. Why can't we be privy to what's actually factually happening?
Well, because they want us to live in a nanny state, Chris. And it's an inconvenient truth as to what happened. Look, these things have to be, people can use their own discretion. We're adults. We can decide what we want to see and what we can't see. And if we're going to have a true debate about Islamic extremism in this country, what happened needs to be shown and discussed.
Yeah.
I'll give you an analogy. Going back to the Vietnam War, there's that iconic photograph of that young girl running down the streets, 90-year-old girl, naked, being burnt from napalm.
Very graphic.
Right now, very graphic, but that changes people's opinion, right? Yeah. Are you saying that should, is she saying this, Inman Grant saying, if that happened today?
She would.
So how can you have a proper debate about the Vietnam War if that is censored in the public?
It is such a no-brainer of an argument. Australians need to push back against this global censorship juggernaut, and that's what it's become. You know, our diggers died in wars against totalitarian regimes that were led by governments which demanded that they control what we saw, what we read, and what we said. As Craig Kelly posted yesterday on X, the eSafety Commissioner should be sacked, the mis- and disinformation bill should be scrapped, and we should be enshrining free speech in the Australian Constitution. I've got to tell you, we are at the crucial crossroads in the censoring of democracy worldwide. Right now is the time. It's got to be stopped before the truth becomes a fake interpretation of reality. This is TNT.
TNT's Dirk Pollman.
There was a plan on the British side to immediately after the victory over Germany to continue the war to push the weakened Soviet Union back over backwards. Yeah, so that is something that is not well known. That plan has been, you could find it on the internet and then it's off and on sometimes again. It's very difficult. It's not long. It's something like, if I recall correctly, something of 30 pages, I would say. I read it.
The Soviets had this coup in Czechoslovakia in 1948. And that appeared as the Soviets really was pushing forward, and they thought that this means that we have to start an alliance against the Soviets. And that was NATO became.
The Dirk Pollman Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
Hey, good to have your company. I tell you what, we've got a lot on our plate today, and we haven't even got to what's happening in Gaza. But as you've been hearing in our news, another 22 killed in Rafah. There are some stories, some human interest stories about babies being born on the side of the road from those bombings and being taken and surviving in hospital. But I'll get you some of that a little bit later in the program. All right, let's get to the Liberal Party's representative for Eastern Victoria, Renee Heath, MLC. Renee, welcome back to TNT.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I've got a story for you later because we often talk about your workload, which I know starts very early in the morning, goes all the way through the day. Usually when I'm trying to communicate with you leading up to this segment, you're too busy, or maybe you're just ghosting me anyway, but that could be it. And then into the night you go, and then all Saturday and all Sunday. I've got a story for you a little later in this segment. But first, the state government's budget is on May the 7th in Victoria. The Age today claims Labor is about to give education a major crew cut. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with some serious budgetary cuts? My first reaction to this was, oh, hang on a second. Education, kids in particular at school during the pandemic, copped it so badly. They virtually lost 18 months to 2 years of schooling, and now they're copping it again. That was my first reaction. But at the same time, you have got a state government financially hemorrhaging. They've got to cut somewhere. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think that education and health aren't the areas to cut. And I also think we've got to look at why we're needing to make the cuts. And it really is because of Labor's budget blowouts and the wastage. And that is what really upsets me the most, is when you're seeing just this unbelievable wastage, like how much it costs to cancel the Commonwealth Games, like not to have it, to cancel it, and then where those cuts end up are in our schools. So I've consistently, since day one in this role, spoken about the importance of education. One in three children in Victoria cannot read proficiently. And that number actually climbs up to one in two when you get to rural and regional areas like where I represent. So prior to the November 22 state election, Labor promised up to $850 million in upgrades across 89 government schools in Victoria. So that included $6.7 million for Wonthaggi Primary School in my area, which really needs it, and $8.7 million for Emerald Secondary College in my area. So these projects included modernisation of classrooms and learning facilities, because some of them are so far behind, it's unbelievable. Playgrounds, sporting facilities, music spaces, food tech, all these sorts of things, and they're at various different stages in planning and design. And the purpose of this funding and this investment has been to ensure students have access to a quality education and a healthy learning environment.
So are they about to take the guts out of most of those promises from the previous election?
Well, the principals have been contacted and told to just hold up. They've been contacted by the Department of Education and told not to progress with plans until after the budget because of uncertainty. Sure. So that is just absolutely unbelievable. Imagine being a school in need and being told, hang on, just don't progress. Just hold up because you're probably not going to get that funding. And I'm so sick of the way that taxpayer dollars are spent in this state. We are the most heavily taxed state in Australia, yet we are the most in debt. And I would say that our taxpayer dollar is worth the least in this state because it is wasted. And I'm really sick of seeing it. I know locals have spoken to me and said, why is our taxpayer dollars being spent on the suburban rail loop while we feel neglected? And I tend to agree with them.
Yeah, this is all Daniel Andrews promising and the Labor Party promising the world to retain power, to continue their power trip, but at the same time, they hardly ever deliver. And I don't know how many times we talk about things being trashed after they've been promised. One of the things that they should have trashed is the rail loop. That should be gone off the agenda completely, and maybe then they could afford their promises on schools.
I agree with you. And just on what you said before, I'm sick of people using promises to win elections. I'm so sick of it. And I just think that we've got to get integrity back into politics, because at the moment we are seeing activist governments, we are seeing activist politicians who are not actually there to represent their communities. So they say whatever it is to get them in that seat, and then they go on and they don't even worry about those promises, and they go, marching to the beat of their own drum, and it's not good enough.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk something that I think relates to Labor in general across the nation. The Sydney Morning Herald Age Resolve poll today showed that Labor was falling further. Voters have cut Labor's primary vote from 32 to 30% over the past month, below the level of the party's historic low at the 2022 election. Support for the coalition increased from 35 to 36%. These are only small numbers, but there is a trend going on here at the moment, and Labor is in deep caca.
There is a trend going on, and I think that voters are feeling the crushing weight of Labor's financial mismanagement, because within that data, it showed that the specific areas that people were really worried about were rising prices, higher interest rates, higher grocery bills, and higher energy costs. And what really shocked me is well over 50% of voters said that they would struggle to pay a major cost if something happened, like their car broke down or their fridge needed replacing. That is how stretched people are. So I know that all eyes will be on the federal budget on May 14 to see if they're going to get any cost of living relief. And what really we do have to talk about here is that this term of government, both state and federal, the main talking point, whenever you go down the street and you ask people what it is that they are struggling with, it's the cost of living. Yet during a cost of living crisis, the focus that Prime Minister Albanese has put on has been with the divisive voice, which literally cost hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars. And this is, and I know I've spoken about it before, but this is the problem with politics. It's no longer about the people that put you there to represent them, and we've got to bring it back to them, because people are really struggling at the moment. You know, mental health is a major issue, and some of that is coming back to the pressures that people are under, because the government is not serving them, they are serving themselves.
Yeah, they're serving themselves all right. Now, someone who has, she always times her intervention in public statements and politics, and I like her style, Gina Rinehart, the mining billionaire. She's now warning Australians and parliamentarians as well about Labor's renewable obsession, which she says is costing Australia a lot. She says it risks destroying Australia's agriculture sector. Now, she's obviously hearing from rural property owners who are sick to death of being, you know, get the knock at the door saying, we're going to put some transmission lines, a new network straight through your property, and your arable land is now no longer yours. We're going to put a solar farm next to you as well, so you'll never be able to insure what you have on your property, because if a fire breaks out, you're about to destroy, you know, $500 million worth of solar panels. Farmers are copying this all because of this evangelical obsession with renewables, Renee.
It's true. And one thing that we've got to stop doing is we've got to stop looking at farming land as just land that hasn't been subdivided for homes or land that is there for power. We've got to start valuing farmers and valuing farming land. And I think Gina is on the money on this one. In this speech, she actually said to the audience that it might shock her, it might shock them, because she spoke about how Australia is so far behind China in areas like energy, economic management, defence and education. And, you know, that I don't think at all she's saying, oh, we should be following China. I don't think that, because we shouldn't be. But she warned that this zero emission policy is destroying Australia's world-class agricultural sector, which is true, because in order to reach even the federal targets, which the Victorian targets are more extreme, we would have to install 22,000 solar panels a day and 40 wind turbines a month. Now, I can't even find what it would mean or what we'd have to do to reach the 95% target that we've just set here in Victoria. But what I do know is it is completely unachievable. It's dishonest because it's not going to drive down prices. And I've said this many times, the only way that this renewable energy can actually be viable is when you are the recipient of a government subsidy. And a government that is broke cannot provide a subsidy. So I've spoken to many business owners. I recently was around Monbolt and I went and I spoke to a huge food producer. And he has been running, it's been a family business for many years. They employ over 100 people. And he said that he cannot continue this into the future. He is looking and he is saying we cannot be competitive with China because of the cost of our energy. Mm. So energy costs in Victoria and in Australia are the biggest, I guess, threat to our way of life and the biggest threat to people getting ahead in life and being able to start a business, take a risk, and from that, give somebody else a go. So I completely agree with Gina. I think good on her. She's got the guts to say it. I think, you know, China is building coal fire stations, over 300 of them as we speak, with better technology. Now, with the money that we paid to close down Hazelwood, we could have done that. We could have built a cleaner, safer coal fire station. In fact, some numbers say we could have built 2.5, but we haven't done that. We've completely just taken ourselves out of the market. And also, they're building nuclear, and that is something that, you know, England is now nuclear, France is using nuclear, because it's actually the only way that we can reduce emissions and have affordable baseload power, yet we're not even allowed to have the conversation in Australia. So I think good on her. She talks some common sense. I think she's got guts, that lady.
Yeah, and just on nuclear, she didn't address nuclear, but she has been a frequent supporter of going down a nuclear route, and she'd be one of the investors behind a nuclear future. You know, what we should be having is a government that knows how to speak to the corporate sector and sit down with them and say, hey, listen, we haven't gone down the nuclear route, but what can you offer the government and the people of Australia? Gina Rinehart would sit down in the Prime Minister's office tomorrow and contribute to her country, which she loves so dearly. I wanted to talk to you about censorship, which I've had quite a bit to say on at the start of the program. I'll do that, though, after a quick break, Renee. I've got to get a news update for our viewers, and we'll do that right now. Let's get to the newsroom on TNT.
Hey, guys, great news.
News Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. News Corp Australia has come under fire for publishing a hit piece on Australian-born journalist and WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Two Japanese Navy helicopters carrying 8 crew members have crashed into the Pacific Ocean during a nighttime training exercise off Tokyo. A volley of rockets were fired at an American military base in northeastern Syria on Sunday. And Moscow's accused Ukraine of targeting Russian journalists stationed on the front line.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Hey, good to have your company. Now, Glenn the truckie, I avoided. I didn't avoid him on purpose. Glenn, you rang in before. I just couldn't take your call at that particular time. But if you want to have something to say, jump on that line again, and I'll be more than willing to take your call. I just couldn't do it at that moment. Let's get back to Renee Heath, MLC, for the Victorian Liberal Party. I want to talk about censorship. I had a stack to say at the start of the program about what's happening in Poland, about what's happening in Scotland, in Canada, in other parts of the world. But leading this juggernaut, leading this runaway train, we're driving the locomotive in Australia because we've got an e-safety commissioner now taking on Elon Musk about posting and allowing the distribution of footage from Bondi and also Wakely from last week, almost like as if it's some kind of porno, almost like as if it's so graphic and so horrible, we couldn't possibly be, deal with it like adults, turn it off, stop it, or see it. But the source of some of the most shocking visuals from, you know, big news stories from decades gone by, Renee, has been the trigger to discuss, debate and discuss changes in laws, making sure that we harness what we have in terms of police forces better to try and stop crime. There are all sorts of reasons why free speech is a necessity in a community. And I just get the feeling that we've got this censor hanging over our shoulders, treating us like children, when she actually should understand that we are adults and surely we have a choice about what we see, about what we don't see, and what makes news.
Look, I agree with you, and I do think that this is the thin end of the wedge. I was incredibly shocked, you know, when you'd see some of that footage. I think that there's a couple of things I'd like to say. The first one is I was concerned that after the Bondi stabbing, the next day we woke up to two more stabbings. There was the priest that was, it was a terrorist attack, and then there was the stabbings with the youth gangs in Melton. So I think we actually do have to look at this and think, hang on, to some people it will be incredibly offensive and can incredibly alarming. To other people, unfortunately and sickeningly, it'll actually be inspiring.
So you think what happened at Bondi triggered what happened at Wakeley?
I think it could have inspired some people. And this worries me because I was very shocked. I haven't seen a lot of stabbings. You know, I speak about stabbing a lot in Parliament, as you know, but you don't see it a lot. And I was really disturbed to wake up the next morning and to sort of think the first thing I do is you look at the news clips. And I was expecting to see a lot about the Bondi stabbings, but no, we saw two other stabbing incidents. And I think that, you know, well, we've got to actually look at that and think, what is the psychology behind this? And what is it inspiring some people? And if it is, we need to look at how we cannot censor, but begin to address that. But more importantly, I think that when I was reading about the eSafety Commission, it had a lot to do with particularly the distribution of the priest that was stabbed. Mm. And I think that...
Look, this is an event that didn't create a death. You're not watching a murder. It's a violent event. It's a stabbing event. But you and I could turn on, you know, our channels today and watch any kind of movie where that was being played several times in front of us.
Well, that's right. But I think, and this is, I guess, the point I want to get to, that what we have to realise is that stabbing was a terrorist attack, and I think that it is downstream to radicalisation that has probably happened online. Mm. But there hasn't been any talk about censoring that. And I think that that is even more pressing. And I think sometimes when things come up, we can hide a little bit behind political correctness and think, well, that stabbing wasn't nice. We should censor that. Mm. Well, I don't know, maybe. I think, you know, even on Instagram, sometimes there's that little thing where it goes blurry. So you can tap on it and then it gets clear if you're happy to watch it.
Yeah.
Whatever. But I think before we go censoring downstream, we might have to go upstream and think, hang on, where are these kids getting radicalized? And why aren't we talking about that?
Because that is incitement. That is the definition of incitement. What happened at Bondi would not have incited many people, and it didn't incite many people. If you're saying it incited that kid that travelled an hour and a half to go to Wakeley to commit what he did allegedly with the priest and the bishop, well, we don't know yet. It may have been the case.
And that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying it incited him. What I'm saying is we are neutral beings. You know, whatever happens, either presses a good button or a bad button in us, and that's not important. But what I am saying is when these things are splashed across the media, to a lot of people, they will just find that rightly disgusting. And that's, you know, what it does to you, that's what it does to me. I wonder if to some of these kids that are more extremist, they think, oh, good on him, I'm going to go do something like that, because it is interesting that the day after there were not one but two stabbing events. But I think that that is less important in a sense to the when we go upstream to think, well, hang on, it is actually it's actually the radicalization that is happening online that nobody's doing anything about. I think that, you know, there were certain faith leaders that were saying things like, well, for instance, October 7 was a genuine form of resistance. That's radicalization. And those things aren't being censored online. Yeah. So why then are we looking at the downstream effect and censoring that when really it's a result of something that's a much bigger issue?
It's like drug crime. Go to the Mr. Big. Start at the start of the tree when the tree started growing, not at the end of the line. I think you're exactly right. And we're not doing any, having any discussion about that off the back of Wakeley. I don't know whether that's because we are too timid to say that this was a terrorist event. I'm glad that the police weren't, even though it was 1:30 in the morning, the police weren't. But I wonder, like, for instance, if there had been, if the shooting of the knife man at Bondi had gone differently and we were having a discussion about how badly it went, so therefore, you know, we know what happened with the gunman because we saw the police inspector, we saw her running towards where he was and we saw on footage him being downed and then we saw her trying to revive him afterwards. We saw the truth, Renee, and the truth was right there in front of us for all to see, which is why people are calling her a hero. But what if it had gone bung and we were told by the, you know, e-safety commissioner that we can't see this footage all of a sudden? And then we start questioning what we're being privy to, what went wrong, what are they trying to hide, and what are they censored to protect their own backsides?
Yeah, and I actually agree with what X have said and Elon Musk has said. He said, well, you know, what you allow in Australia, that's not an issue of international law. You can't just tell us what to do. And I think that's true. I think I just find the lopsidedness of what we censor really frustrating. And I think this is an example of that.
Yeah, I agree. I want to talk about people like yourself really right now. I want to talk about workaholics. We know you're a workaholic, and I haven't told my listeners or viewers to the extent of your workaholism, but it's true. You just have a crazy work regimen. But Melbourne women Lucy Bradlow and Bronwyn Bock have announced a plan to run for federal parliament. They've got kids, both of them, I understand it. They're married. They find it very difficult to work and bring up their kids at the same time, which is understandable. They want to run as independent job-sharing candidates. Bradlow, a political communications expert, and Bock, an investment banker, say they will attempt to nominate jointly as a single candidate on the ballot paper for the Melbourne seat of Higgins. If elected, they would split official duties, travel to Canberra on alternate weeks, and make joint decisions about key issues. Now, on a legal basis, I heard Anne Toomey, the constitutional lawyer, speak on radio today, and she was saying she doesn't think that this is constitutionally viable. Other lawyers who are advising them are saying, no, it's perfectly okay. But just as a concept, in a world which is so fast-moving and, you know, so pressured, and the work of a politician is multifaceted, and you virtually can't look after your family. How many politicians do we hear get out of politics and end up breaking up from their family or breaking up from their wife because they never saw their family during their political life? And I just wonder whether this was one of the ways we could alleviate that.
Look, I think it's a creative idea. I think it's one that's worth looking at. However, I don't think you can be a part-time politician. I think that it is your job to respond any time of the day or the night and to be there for the needs of your community. And I think that I read it and I sort of thought, that's interesting. And I hope I'm not a workaholic. I think I'm a hard worker. I hope I'm not a workaholic. But the fact is, you need to respond 24/7. And there are people that contact you at all times of the day and night. And I just think if somebody reaches out to you in the middle of the night or whatever, if they've got an issue with housing or domestic violence, there's no way that I could ever refer them to my colleague and say it's not my week.
Yeah, but what they do, that they say, their argument was that they share their email and share their phone. So there's always one of them monitoring their phone and monitoring their email, and there's always someone to take the call, whether it's Lucy or whether it's the other woman. Yeah, their argument was that they could just halve the workload?
I don't reckon you can. And this is, I think that there's a lot of talk about, you know, women should be able to have it all. I think we can have it all, but we can't have it all at the same time. So if you are tied up, like I'm very fortunate at the moment that, you know, I can work very hard, but it's not like at every stage of my life I could do that. Mm. And the other thing is there is endless amounts of bills, policies that you need to be across. You just cannot take your eyes off the ball for a little while. I think if you're looking for work-life balance, I honestly would say to you, do not choose politics.
Right.
I honestly would say that. I also think that we shouldn't be looking at politics as a career move where we're making it work for us. No, we're there to work for the community. And I'm not, this isn't a reflection on them at all, but because I don't know them. But when I read that, I just thought, no, that is not possible. Potentially, if you went into politics with a policy agenda and that was it, you could maybe do it. But I think if you were literally there to represent the needs of your constituents, I actually think that it's something that you've got to give your life to for a term. I think that it's actually about sacrifice and service. And I guess, you know, maybe it is within their rights constitutionally, but I think that at some stage we've got to shift away from rights. We're always talking about our rights and we've got to look, hang on, what's our responsibility? And I think our responsibility is to give our all to that community for a four-year term. And then if we've still got enough in the tank at the end of that four-year term, we can go again. But I think that people are really annoyed with career politicians that are there to make things work for themselves. No, we actually should be there to absolutely stand in the gap for our community. And I'm not saying that that's not what is behind their attitude. I don't know the ladies. I just read it and I thought, that's not possible, but maybe I've got a cannot do attitude. Who knows?
No, you mount a really good argument here. And I just wonder on a practical sense too, that if they disagree on a major bill, one wants to say yes to the government, the other one wants to say no. Who decides? Like legally, constitutionally, who's in charge of the other? And if you are absolutely equal and you feel totally and utterly convinced of your decision on a particular bill, do you run into the parliament on your week off and demand to sit in the chair next or share the chair next to your partner and vote yes while they vote no?
That's right. I think that's a huge issue. And what if there comes an area where there's a conscience vote and your conscience is telling you something completely different? I think that the Westminster system is successful for a reason, and I think that it's something that it should be valued. And back in the day, there used to be just areas where there'd be a farming area and they'd say, well, who are we going to send? Who's going to represent us the best? And that is the person that would go. We've got to get back to those days where it's not activists. It's not people that are like, we're going to go in to fix the environment. We're going to go in to do this. No, we need to be people that are going to go in there and fight for our constituency. And I believe that that takes all of you. But, you know, that is just my opinion. I will watch with great interest to see how it all pans out. And I do wish them well.
Yeah, good stuff. Amazing story. And I haven't heard of a story like that anywhere else in the world. It's quite fascinating. Renee Heath, fantastic. You get back to working your backside off and all the very best. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. Lovely to speak to you.
Good on you, Renee. Much appreciated. Renee Heath, MLC, the Liberal Party's representative for Eastern Victoria. Maybe you've got a view on all of that. Maybe your view is that this can't happen, possibly, that they'd never decide to agree equally, that you can't just make a decision based on who's rostered on that week. I can't see that working, can you? I don't know whether this is a stunt either. I get the feeling there's a whiff of maybe they're making the point about governments making it easier for working mums to be part of the workforce. Maybe there's a point in what they're doing. They don't necessarily think that they'll legally be able to do some kind of job share over one seat in the federal parliament. And I doubt whether technically and constitutionally you could do that. But maybe they're just making a point. Maybe this is all a stunt and some of us are being conned. Not this little duck. Let's take a break and then take your calls. I've got plenty of time. Give us a call from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. Maybe our American audience can tell us about whether they've heard of this before, job sharing in politics. From the UK, 033-0024-1026, and from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Might not see it coming. It's prediabetes, and it captures one in three adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1-minute prediabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
I tell my son, I love you, every single day. I love you. Now, my dad has never said that to me. Not because he doesn't love me, but because culturally, it wasn't comfortable for him. Now that he's a grandfather, he says, I love you to my son every time he sees him. My advice to all the fathers out there, forget the cultural restrictions. They grow up way too fast for you to waste even a single precious moment.
This is The Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Yeah, very interesting. Some interesting issues there. Just in terms of schools, I wanted to tell you this. This is now been on the Sydney Morning Herald, and I think this is interesting. Apparently, schools have now been ordered to go back to old teaching methods. How interesting is this? Like, how many decades have we argued that the old teaching methods, for instance, in reading were the ones that worked, and many other teaching methods never, ever worked? Well, they're now talking about doing a lot more from yesteryear and getting rid of many of the teaching methods that have been employed in more recent years. And I'm just trying to find, here it is. Here's this story. Last month, every public school teacher across the New South Wales state was told they would be getting some training. On their first day back from the autumn holidays, a professional learning session would cover explicit teaching. For some veteran educators, it meant revisiting what they had known for decades and covered in teachers' college. For their younger colleagues, explicit teaching, where students are given clear step-by-step instructions, represents the industrial era model of schooling their university lecturers taught them to fear. Explicit teaching typically involves telling students sitting in rows the steps required to perform a skill or task at the start of the lesson before allowing them to practice it. You know, the things that we were brought up with. Teacher says, this is what we're going to do today, kids, and this is how I want you to do it. And we sat down and we did the task. It doesn't work that way anymore. In contrast, inquiry learning means confronting students with a problem and asking them to try and work out the answers for themselves, similar to how a scientist might work it out. This is what our children have been put through in more recent years. Advocates say inquiry-based learning fosters more in-depth understanding and deeper thinking. Yeah, if you get it right, explicit teaching adherents believe inquiry learning is ineffective. It wastes time, I can see that, and unnecessarily confuses students, and I can see that too. While schools in New South Wales over the past two decades have adopted inquiry-based learning, conservative voices, oh no, not those conservative voices that come from a period when education actually meant something and education was actually effective. Conservative voices in the education sector have been increasingly agitating for the use of explicit teaching. Backed by academics who had studied the science of learning, the Australian Education Research Organisation reviewed more than 328 studies and found explicit instruction was an effective teaching practice across a variety of contexts for different subgroups of students. So this is not just about the way you read, and there's been this argument about citing words and understanding how to spell the word from what you have seen on a sight card, as opposed to the way you and I were taught, which was to pronounce and sound out the syllables. Well, that's all gone back the right way. In other words, now the kids are learning how to sound out the syllables and having various rules that aren't necessarily consistent, but understanding what those inconsistent rules are, which is typical of the English language. But more importantly, sounding out the sounds of a word to come up with the way to spell them. So that argument's been done and won, going back to the way it was 30 years ago. And this explicit teaching, according to what we're hearing coming out of the New South Wales Education Department, is a return to the future, returning to past practices that clearly have worked, should never have been changed, and are going to be corrected. Now, I applaud what's being done. I didn't think anyone in the Education Department would admit fault, would admit that their practices weren't the way of teaching children. It makes sense, doesn't it, that you actually tell kids the way to go about it? And if you want them to have a greater understanding of why you got to that result, sit down and teach them as to why that is the case, as to that is the practice you need to follow to reach your outcome, because otherwise it doesn't work and this is why. You can do that, just do it a different way. And if something in the past in education has worked, why are we trying to reinvent the wheel? As we've done in education for 25 years, and sure enough, in the past 21 years, our education outcomes internationally have plateaued and dropped. And you wonder why? Because coincidentally, we changed the way we taught the kids. And now, thankfully, there's a move back to the successful practices of the past. Now, I wanted to tell you something else. Mac Horton, who's always got something to say. This is the swimmer, the Australian retired swimmer, who campaigned for clean sport throughout his career. Remember he called out rival Sun Yang? He refused to stand up on the podium for the Chinese swimmer because he knew he was a doper. He says he is infuriated by the latest Chinese doping scandal and believes Australian athletes have been let down by a failed system. The sporting world is reeling from news that 23 Chinese swimmers tested positive for a banned substance, it's called TMZ, before the Tokyo Olympics in 2021. The athletes were allowed to compete at the Olympics after not being provisionally suspended. Why would you not, on the basis of that first test, suspend these swimmers? Because what you've got is a whole series of medal winning that is unethical and untruthful. It doesn't record the winners that did it the right way and did it outside of cheating. Why would they keep that such a secret? Or typically of the Olympic movement, they're too embarrassed to spoil the games by another doping scandal. I think probably the latter. But the athletes were allowed to compete in 2021. China's swimming team won 3 gold medals in races involving Australians, Australians who probably should hold a gold medal to this very day. And Horton told the Sydney Morning Herald, "This news is infuriating for the entire sporting community. The World Anti-Doping Agency accepted China's explanation," listen to this, "that athlete samples were contaminated by food served in a kitchen at a team accommodation during a camp." All the other one, it plays jingle bells, as if that is believable. The investigation found there were small amounts of TMZ in the samples and would not have amounted to significant improvements in performance. Well, why are there small amounts of TMZ in their system? And how much other TMZ have they taken leading up to the Olympics of 2021? WADA's lack of transparency has angered the swimming community and raised questions of double standards given athletes like Australia's Shayna Jack were provisionally suspended while an investigation took place. Why was Shayna Jack told, sorry, you can't compete, you're going to be shamed until you can prove your point, which he eventually did, but you're going to be shamed in front of the rest of the world provisionally, but not the Chinese swimmers? Oh no, we couldn't possibly ban that many Chinese swimmers because we don't want to upset China. Sport. Don't tell me that politics and sport don't cascade. They collide each and every Olympic Games. It's an outrage. I've got to take a break, get you some news, and come back after the news with plenty more right here on TNT.